The media darlings of the Home Renovation Network, HGTV, announced their final season last month for fixer-upper Chip and Joanna Gaines. My friends, they settled in Waco, Texas, turning dilapidated homes into dream homes for their clients. We watched, and since Fixer Upper aired in 2013, they've built quite the empire, starting with Magnolia Homes, their remodeling business, and the latest venture with Target, announcing their lifestyle brand. So what does HGTV mean in the larger scope of chasing the American dream? We're unpacking this with Caitlin Flanagan. She's an author, contributing editor for The Atlantic. Her recent piece in New York Magazine is Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. She writes about real-life effects of following soothing storylines on HGTV. Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you write that HGTV unspools with the same bland cheerfulness as Leave It to Beaver, and its heart is in the same place. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I was really trying to figure out what is the feeling that I have when I watch those shows. And it's some sort of very comforting, pleasant feeling. And it reminds me of those old sitcoms. You know, I'm in my 50s, so Leave It and Beaver was kind of before my time, but it was always in reruns after school. And nothing bad ever happened, and you knew everything was going to work out, and you knew the people were sort of happy and helpful on the show. And it's just, and ultimately, what both that show and HGTV and just all those kind of warm family sitcoms from the past are about, ultimately, are sort of happy home lives. And even though what people are buying are houses, they're not really addressing any issues of the family, you kind of get a sense, oh, a family would have to be happy in a home like that. If you had a house with such a nice space for everybody to spend time together, and if everything looked so nice, you can't help but think, oh, a family would have to be happy there. So that's kind of the tone or the feeling of the network that I always get when I watch it.
Explain for us how the format of different shows on the channel work from, you know, the viewing standpoint. How do they work?
Well, they're very formulaic. Anybody who watches, I'm sure there's plenty of listeners who have a favorite show or two on HGTV. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them has an inflexible formula. You know, if it's Chip and Joanna on Fixer Upper, you know, they're going to drive it. They're going to figure out how much somebody has to spend on a house and drive them and show them three houses that are a little bit not that well kept up. And they can choose one of them and they'll decide what the budget is to fix it up. And then they're whisked off. Chip and Joanna do all these marvelous things, and then they come back to take the tour. So every single episode resolves in this beautiful tour of the house. And all the different shows, whether it's a renovation show or whether it's a show about buying a house that's in good shape, House Hunters is that sort of flagship show of the network. They always end on this very happy, satisfying note. And people have spoken extensively about what that means to them. And even in this kind of era where there just seems to be so much bad news or upsetting news or shocking news, you can turn to HGTV and it's always good news. And in fact, it was the third most popular network last year ahead of CNN. So people are kind of making sometimes a shift when they don't want to see that bad cable news anymore. There's a network that's always open with some good news.
Yeah, and I was reading somewhere it is the antidote to CNN, and it certainly rivals it in the ratings, apparently.
Well, last year, it you know, every month, obviously, these top networks jockey back and forth, but last year it beat CNN in the ratings. And a lot of people have said that they kind of self-consciously turned to that. And a lot of people who said that, you know, before maybe the last couple of years when everything's gotten so contentious and so angry so often in the news, that their nighttime habit, instead of checking in on a late night news, is to just put on HGTV and have sort of a pleasant viewing experience before they go to sleep at night.
We're talking with author Caitlin Flanagan. She is a contributing editor for The Atlantic. She's a reviewer and social critic. Her recent piece in New York Magazine is titled Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. She writes about the real-life impact of following the storylines on HGTV. You can join in at 800-642-1234. To be honest, why do you watch these programs? What effects do these TV shows have on the way you think about your own life? Have you been inspired to upgrade your house or remodel a home due to something you saw on HGTV? Tell us about a project you took on that went well or maybe not so well. 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Caitlin, you put the spotlight, if you will, on the open plan kitchen with Beware, What's Wrong with Knocking Down a Few Walls to Create That Style. What about the open plan kitchen?
Well, I noticed that on every single show, it's always, no matter what happens, if there is any wall between the kitchen and the family room, that wall is going to come down. And it's, you know, even on the shows where there are house hunters that are just buying houses around the world, everybody that's on HGTV wants that open plan kitchen. And if it's a renovation show, they make it look super easy to just like knock down that wall and open up that space.
Load bearing or not.
Load bearing. Well, that's the other thing is that where the show doesn't really do these things very, the way that they would really be done in real life, they're always just bashing them down with a sledgehammer instead of sort of, you know, cutting off the drywall and teasing it off and then dealing with what's behind it. But it gives you this idea that you could just take down that wall and have that open plan show place. And, you know, they've really become the standard of what people look for in houses. And I must confess, whenever I don't have one, and I wish I did, I do. And when I visit people that have them, they seem like, oh, I wish I had a kitchen like that. Although the flip side of it is, you know, Betty Friedan, who wrote The Feminine Mystique, which was all about how women were very oppressed by nonstop housekeeping. And she wrote it in the early 1960s when the open plan kitchen was first being born. And she was adamantly against it. She said, this is going to mean so much more work for women because they're constantly going to have a clean kitchen because now it's their entertaining space as well as their private, you know, kitchen space. And I think that's kind of become true. There are times when I've had friends drop by and I think, well, maybe it's good that I don't have an open plan kitchen because my kitchen is a mess right now.
And you can't hide anything then. Everything is exposed.
Right. And I always notice that with these shows, when we get the wonderful tour of the houses, no one's moved in yet. Everything's pristine. Nobody has like a kitty litter box or dishes in the sink. It's just the ideal view with the perfect furniture and everything in perfect working order and this showplace of a kitchen that opens out to the family room. And you just can't help but imagine what your family would be like in that house and how you would live there and how everything would just be sort of up to TV standards of cleanliness and cheerfulness. And it's a powerful dream that we, you know, a lot of us really enjoy watching.
Caitlin, let's explore this idea of flipping houses in contrast to the current climate of real estate. As we know, many cities around the country are approaching, you know, very high real estate for home buying. What are the economic consequences do you see from this constant stream of shows aimed at upgrading and trading homes?
Right. Well, a lot of the shows are about outright flipping, which is usually a married couple. Typically, he's a contractor and she's maybe a designer or a realtor. They find a kind of rundown house and they set up a budget of what they're going to spend to fix it up and then sell it to make a profit. And it turns out, according to a recent study by the National Bureau of Economic Research, that pattern of speculating on houses, buying a house not to live in or not to have as a second home or a lake house, but specifically to make a profit on, that may have had a significant contribution to the last housing bubble and housing crisis, because we've always assumed that we know the reasons for that housing crisis of 2008, which was that bankers were giving mortgages to unscrupulous bankers were giving mortgages to people who couldn't afford them, and those people with low credit scores, the so-called subprime market were defaulting at a higher level than ever before, and that's what led to the crash. But in fact, what the Bureau of Economic Research just did was they looked at a huge number of Equifax credit scores and house purchases. And what they found out is the people with poor credit weren't defaulting any more often than they do normally. It's a high default group, but it wasn't more during the housing bubble. They didn't default more. The people who defaulted more were people in the upper middle or top of the credit income, credit score distribution, who were buying additional houses for speculation. Now, it doesn't mean they were doing what we see happening on HGTV. It wasn't mean that they were buying specific houses to fix up and then to sell in that sense of flipping. But they may have seen, oh, that's a good investment to pick up a few extra houses when they're so cheap. Maybe I'll rent them. Maybe I'll hold on to them. And maybe I'll then sell them. But when the market turned and they got upside down on these houses, owed more on them maybe than the house was currently worth, they weren't their primary residence. It wasn't a place where kids were enrolled in the local school or what have you, and they just walked away from them. And so you have to kind of wonder, is America tipping its toes again into the waters of flipping houses, and is that going to cause us some kind of problem down the line? It's just a little, just something I've wondered about, and my editor wondered about, especially as we looked into the network. Is flipping, is the somewhat dangerous trend of flipping, is that going to get us back into hot water again?
We don't see much of the tension or as much of the risk when we look at flip or flop. And even when they do a screenshot of what the flip or flop couples made in the end, and if they lost a little bit, we still go on our merry way to the next episode.
Right. And I love your word tension. You know, whenever I have friends who say they're going to remodel their own house in some way, I always say, oh, great, you'll need a good contractor and an excellent marriage counselor. Because everybody always seems to get in these huge fights when they're redoing their houses, you know. I guess you're in Wisconsin. I imagine maybe in the Midwest people know more about remodeling houses and maybe it goes more smoothly. I'm in Los Angeles. And, you know, people really, they want their houses remodeled. They don't have a lot of practical skills a lot of the time. It goes on forever. And, you know, contractors will start on three different houses at the same time. And there's a lot of tension in my experience when people really remodel a house. But the idea on HGTV is that, you know, a woman can turn to her husband and say, gee, wouldn't it be great if we did these five major things to this house? And the husband is completely in agreement that they should do it. And he totally knows how to do it because he's a contractor. And somehow, like in this kind of I dream of genie moment, blink, blink, 2 seconds later, the house is perfectly done. And all the workmen showed up on time and the finished carpenter showed up on time. And the guy who was going to redo the floor showed up on time. And everything is, and they're often coming in under budget. If you know anybody who's done a major remodel on a house and came in significantly under budget, I mean, they should play the lottery. It's always over budget. So that's part of the dream, too, that the husband and wife get in zero fights, it comes in under budget, and it takes a couple of weeks.
Are these shows on HGTV tempting people back into flipping houses, do you think?
I think, well, one thing I wrote about is that you watch the network, and you, if you like it, and I enjoy it, you enjoy watching these things. But the other feeling is you start getting a feeling that your living space, whatever it is, a house or apartment, a condo, boy, it's really not that great. It really needs some upgrades. And your producer and I were laughing yesterday because we had a phone call and I was in the car and I said, oh, I'm on my way to Home Depot. And she said, well, that's ironic that, you know, you wrote about HGTV. And I realized, yes, I was picking up some under-counter lights to have installed. Never in my life would I have thought, you know, I would a million times think, oh boy, it would be better if we had some under-counter lights. I would never have researched it, gone to Home Depot, bought them, found an electrician. I think it does inspire people to do things around the house. Now, if it's something they can afford to do, if it's reasonable, if it's if they have a, you know, a reputable contractor or electrician to help them, or if they or their spouse are good at it, well, that's probably great. But it's not like there was an old show in the 80s and 90s called This Old House. It was on PBS,
yeah.
And Bob Vila was the star.
We know
and
it
he
well.
Really showed you how to do things.
Right.
You know, he teased the drywall off something and show you how to find the rot behind it and show you these products.
And we were taking notes. Like, my mom
exactly.
and dad were, you know, we were watching closely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really was an educational show. And people would really tune in to learn how to do things. And it was still in the era when people did a lot of their significant home repairs themselves. They didn't automatically pick up the phone and call some expert.
Mm.
And that's not what HGTV is about. HGTV doesn't tell you how to do these things. And a lot of their advice is really wrong. You know, their advice about how to take a wall down is completely wrong. You know, that you just sledgehammer it away without looking at anything.
But it looks good on TV. There's a lot of action.
There's action and it resolves quickly. They have a big change very quickly when you do that. But this is really the kind of change that you're paying someone to do. So, and they're substantive changes. So just like anything, I always say it's like when you're young and you read fashion magazines, suddenly you think you don't look that good anymore because you're not as thin as the girls in the fashion magazine. And when you watch, you know, when you read Shelter magazines or watch HGTV, suddenly your house doesn't look as good anymore. And it can stir that old, very American itch to buy something, to upgrade something, to get the nicer looking thing that somebody else has. So I always think that's an impulse that I have to watch. After watching a lot of it for the magazine piece, I really started to get discontent with my kitchen, and I had to talk myself off the ledge and say, everything's fine. You know, you're going to have a perfectly happy life if you don't have an open plan kitchen.
Last year, Fixer Upper was HGTV's highest rated show, followed by Flipper Flop. Our love affair with watching home remodeling is big business for the network. Consider the sale this summer of HGTV's parent company, Scripps Network Interactive, to Disney Discovery Communications for almost $12 billion. So now, nearly a decade removed from the Great Recession, when being underwater on a mortgage was the reality for so many Americans, what does HGTV tell us about flipping homes? Author Caitlin Flanagan is with us. Her recent piece in New York Magazine is called Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. Join in at 800-642-1234. What do you watch HGTV or similar programs for? What effect do television shows have on the way you think about your own life? Have they inspired you to upgrade your house or remodel a home? We'll be back after this short break here on the Ideas Network. The final season of Fixer Upper will air next month. That means no more Chip and Joanna Gaines showing couples on limited budgets how they can get the most bang for their buck by buying the least desirable home in the Gaines' home base of Waco, Texas. As Chip would say, a couple is, quote, all in at a certain dollar amount. Let's take a listen.
For our new home here in Waco, our all-in budget is $375,000.
You know, so the Severance just called and decided on the prickly pear house. You know, I really want to get my head around this project before we get into demo day so that we can blow the Severance out of the water.
What I want to show you today is really kind of my ideas on really opening up the space, but also staying within your budget. I can't wait to tackle the exterior and just really make it feel, kind of just bring it alive, but also have that quaint, cute, cottagey feel.
Yes, we're excited to see it.
Let's do it.
Oh my God. Unbelievable.
Wow.
And that's the HGTV show Fixer Upper that will soon be ending its run after 4 years. We're talking about the home remodeling empire and what HGTV means to our psyche as we chase our own version of the American dream. Caitlin Flanagan is a contributing editor to The Atlantic. Her recent piece for New York Magazine is Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. Join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we're entering a new housing crisis? Or do you think property really is a sound investment that always returns financial gain? What is it that makes you turn on HGTV? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Randall in Ripon. Hi, Randall.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have to admit, I've only watched that show maybe once or twice. I'm more of a This Old House fan, but I remember back in the days when they had the extreme home makeover and all that. And as a carpenter, and I'm going on knocking on a door 45 years here, the things that always go through my head is how long is this going to last? And touching upon the situation with couples and stuff like that, I've seen more new homes or remodeling projects where the relationship really is in dire straits, and this is like a last gasp to somehow pull themselves together. And even as a builder, I'm stressed out. Mm-hmm. And I've lived in homes I've worked on, and it's not fun. And I just, like, boy, talk about, you know, adding more fuel to the fire. I just, usually it's it doesn't work out.
Caitlin, Randall says a carpenter usually doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I wish I had talked to him before I wrote the piece. That idea that couples sort of the way that some people will, and it's obviously never a good idea. Our mothers told us this a long time ago when things are really going poorly, have a baby, you know, and that's almost the worst thing you can do, and try to do this big home remodeling project. And it kind of speaks to the power that the house, the home has in a marriage, that, oh, if we could get that home right, that place, you know, that's the place where the family lives. That's the place where the couple is together. That if we have these problems in our marriage, maybe we can just fix this physical thing, the house, and then the problems will be solved. And obviously, whenever people enter, you know, jump in on big projects like that, it's the worst thing to do. But I thought that was really interesting. And as far as how things last, you know, on the home makeover shows on other networks, I know they've had a real problem. Extreme Home Makeover has had this problem of getting, you know, visits back to those houses 2 or 3 years later. And oftentimes the things haven't lasted well at all. But I haven't seen much about that in HGTV, but I will be very interested to follow that over time.
Randall, thanks for the call. Let's now go to Kelly in Appleton, who joins us. Hi, Kelly.
Hello. I have to say, I am an HGTV addict. I record all the House Hunters, House Hunters International, but mostly just to kind of laugh and roll my eyes because these people have no idea, or are they told to say these things? Granite countertops, hardwood floors, backsplashes. You know, I can't have stairs in my house because I have children, or I need a sitting area in my bedroom. Really? Really? Is that what we need?
Well, and, you know, Kelly brings up House Hunters, and I was learning about House Hunters as I prepped for today, and apparently it takes only a few days for them to film an episode, and it's for a fraction of a cost that a regular TV drama would have for an hour-length show. So they're accomplishing a lot in just a few days to show a makeover.
Well, as far as House Hunters, where they're buying a house, there was kind of this scandal a few years ago when it turned out the whole thing was kind of staged, that the people who were supposedly choosing a house were actually closing on the house. They'd already bought the house. Mm. And so that the houses that they were being shown in comparison, they weren't really in the market to buy those other houses, and they're pretending to just take a look at them. And that adds to the calm feeling of, boy, buying a house must be really simple, when any of us who've done it know that it's this really complex thing of getting all your finances together and you know, getting into escrow and all that. And I really liked her comment about all these extra things that the network tells us that we have to have, you know, as she was saying, a sitting area in the bedroom. And the one that always gets me is they'll always look at the kitchen and say, and of course, all new appliances. They never go over and say, well, does the refrigerator work or does the stove work? It's always all new appliances because it's a design feature. And that's just kind of that aspirational, dreamy quality that, as you know, it's a fantasy that's fun to watch. And it's also something that can make us feel a little discontent sort of quickly as we watch it.
I wonder, though, are producers, is HGTV perhaps sometimes... and I know this is a loaded word, but exploiting these people who come on their show? Because I read some of the show notes, and it's like they want a room for the senior cat or a room for all of their Christmas trees. And I'm just like, really? Are these people, is someone blowing this out of proportion a little bit? Exaggeration here?
Well, the shows are heavily produced, as they would say, in Hollywood, meaning that, you know, if they find some weird aspect of the family, they're certainly going to hype that to give us a, you know, an extra little thrill as we watch it. I don't think they're exploiting them, because the first season, which was in, I think, 96 or so, they had to do a really hard job to find anybody willing to be on the show. It was before the real reality TV craze had kicked in, and people weren't so willing to show how much money they had saved up or hadn't saved up to buy a house. But today there's a long waiting list to be on Homebuyers. People in today's reality TV culture, they want to show off their brand new house, and they want to be shown in the experience of selecting one house over another. So I don't think they feel exploited. They're very eager to be on the show now.
Upgrading homes, as you mentioned, comes with lots of surprises. There could be faulty wiring. There could be mold. We've seen mold episodes, unstable foundations, cracking foundation. Let's take Property Brothers here for a moment. Let's take a listen to this episode of Property Brothers.
This is amazing. Oh my gosh.
And you guys went through a lot. We had so many problems pop up with this place. And you're past that now. You can just let out a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
And just enjoy your home.
To the last detail, everything is gorgeous. It's perfect.
Everything is gorgeous. It's perfect. You had so many obstacles to get to this point. Without HGTV, could this couple have done this?
Well, that's always a question that people who know about construction always bring up when I was interviewing people, particularly on those flipping shows or on Chip and Joanna's show, Fixer Upper, that the budget they show for that massive amount of work is really unrealistic, that it's much more expensive to do those kinds of things. And moreover, they never add in the labor to do that work, you know, whatever it costs to install all those floors and knock down those works, the physical work and hours, labor hours don't go into it. So my sense of the people I've interviewed is that they've really lowballed the cost of all that work. And again, we're not expecting it to be, you know, a class at the university about how to be a contractor. It's, you know, it's a diverting, fun, pleasurable network like the Food Network. So I'm not at all saying that they should be held to some higher standard of instructional television, but it does make everything seem awfully easy. And if you can get your head in the right mindset that, yeah, that's part of the pleasure of watching it is imagining it being so easy, then you're fine. But if you get into your mindset, oh, it would be really easy for us to do that at our house and it wouldn't be very expensive and it wouldn't take a long time. Whereas there was that master carpenter just saying, in reality, he's lived in some houses that he's working on, and it's really difficult to live in a house that's undergoing major renovations and you don't have a kitchen for a while and you're microwaving things, you know, on the dining room table. It's, you know, a lot more involved than the show suggests.
Well, Colleen on Facebook says, I blame HGTV for the fact that my house is not selling. It has made everybody want move-in ready granite countertops, stainless steel appliances. Colleen says, I used to watch it a lot when they had a nice variety of shows. Now it seems like the only things I can find on it are Fixer Upper, Property Brothers, and Beachfront Something or Other.
Isn't that an interesting comment? I bet she's right. I bet it's really changed the expectation of home buyers as far as what the basic amenities or basic features of a house should have. I'm in Los, you know, you were talking about exploitation of the buyers. I'm in Los Angeles where there's a huge immigrant population that often gets exploited in kind of day labor work to do these kind of remodels. And so it has become scandalously cheap, especially if you're an unethical person, to, you know, get the fancy granite countertops, et cetera, and have them all put in. But, you know, at my age, I'm 55, and the idea that, you know, I grew up in one house essentially, but that my parents would look at a house and think it wasn't even possible to live in it if it didn't have the most, you know, excellent kind of kitchen and the certain kind of bathrooms and whatever, it just wasn't true. I mean, I think I was a big deal in my mom's life was when she redid the upstairs bathroom. I think we'd lived in the house 12 years when she did that. And she saved up a long time to be able to do it. And not that my parents were super frugal people, but they were, you know, American middle-class people. And you didn't just do any big unnecessary upgrade without a lot of thought and care and waiting and being very patient about it. So I wouldn't be surprised if that home seller is correct that it's affected what the buyers are expecting when they walk into a house.
Caitlin Flanagan is with us. She is a contributing editor to The Atlantic. She's a reviewer and social critic and written two books. Her recent piece in New York Magazine is titled Beware the Open Plan Kitchen, and she's been writing about the real life of impact of following these storylines on HGTV. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jacqueline now in Slinger. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi. Like your previous caller, I watched a couple of the shows. I watched Flipping Vegas and Zombie House Flippers, and I think they're hilarious because I would switch topics a little bit because you talked about kind of stuff they threw into them, but how they do demolitions. Like I watch them hook up a pickup truck and pull off a carport or a building addition with their pickup truck. If you're advising people to do that, you're just really looking for disaster. And like you said, sledgehammering down walls. And nobody hires a home inspector to go in and look, check out the wiring, check out the plumbing, check for termites. No, they just do a quick walkthrough and say, yeah, we'll buy it and we'll fix it up. That's just totally hilarious.
Jacqueline sees the entertainment value to HGTV.
Yeah, well, this was when I was talking to people when I was writing the piece this summer, and I happened to have a run into a friend of a friend somewhere, and he does contracting work, and that was the first thing he said. This whole idea that you would ever take a wall down without getting an engineer or somebody in there to inspect it, and the Property Brothers are notorious for that. They're always taking a wall down, and then the buyers show up, and they go, the Property Brothers says, oh, bad news. This wall turned out to be load-bearing. It's going to cost a lot of money to fix it. And I'm thinking, you took the wall down without seeing that it was load-bearing? So we should, the one message I would say is, if you're going to do a house over, because what you saw on HGTV, find someone who's a contractor, who's a friend of a friend, who'll sit down with you over a cup of coffee and just let him or her know what it is you saw and what you think is possible, and just see if that's really within the realm of the possibility in the eyes of a professional.
Jacqueline, thanks for that call. Let's go to John now in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yeah, well, I've got a little 40 years of hands-on experience doing some of this stuff, mostly buying places, single family or duplexes to rent out. But over the years, I've taken out a few load-bearing walls, and I've known exactly what I was doing there. The only time I tried flipping a property, actually, was 2006. And yeah, okay, that was bad, bad, bad timing. Tens and tens of thousands of dollars lost there. But one thing, a lot of those shows are done in areas that are a lot more expensive than Wisconsin in terms of real estate values. And I've helped my kids work in, West Coast and New Orleans and stuff, too, so I can see the difference. Things cost the same at Home Depot, pretty much, whatever part of the country you're in. But the return you're going to get when you sell is going to vary. And one other thing I would say is that it takes more time, more expertise, and more dollars to put things back together again than it did to take them apart.
John, thank you for those words of wisdom. Caitlin, go ahead.
Yeah, again, that's exactly the sort of person I think people need to talk to before they get involved in one of these projects. But about the flipping and the house values, that's a really important point. The Hall flipping shows really got started with that show Flip or Flop with Christina and Tarek El Moussa. Mm-hmm. And they're based in Orange County, which had one of the highest foreclosure rates in the country. So there are still a lot of housing stock there that's been foreclosed on, so you can buy it relatively cheaply, but it's on very valuable land because you're near the California Ocean, the Pacific. So there's a value proposition right there. And if a house just goes up 5% in value, you could have made a big profit because of where you are. So a lot of the shows are based in places where you have a similar kind of housing stock. So before you flip in your local area, you want to be really sure that you understand the underlying real estate values and don't just think that you're going to get a return on investment that you would if you did it, say, in Las Vegas, or where there's a lot of foreclosed houses and a very, transient population that are looking for houses, or in Orange County, California.
HGTV, the acronym stands for Home and Garden TV. Somewhere along this TV production journey, Garden's got the short shrift. We turn it to for distraction, a calming storyline to divert from the pressing issues of the day. But are the storylines doing more to us than we think? We're discussing this with author Caitlin Flanagan. She's a contributing editor for The Atlantic, wrote a recent piece about HGTV for New York Magazine. Join in at 800-642-1234. Full disclosure, I remember getting sucked into HGTV in the third trimester of pregnancy. Are there times in your life that you've watched more HGTV than other times in your life? What is it that compels you to watch home design shows? 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back after a quick break. In each episode, the buyers must decide among three properties, ultimately choosing one before the end of the episode. That's House Hunters. The show concludes by revisiting the buyers in their new home a few weeks or months later when they describe the changes they've made and the effect the new home has on their life. But some things on a buyer's wish list are pretty outrageous. Let's take a listen.
He does want a three-car garage. However, they both really like a large ensuite bath with a separate water closet. And Kim has a specific vision for the kitchen.
I would love, love, love to have a white kitchen with dark granite, and I would like to have a rectangular island because that's the only shape I like on the island.
You and this island, I don't want to lose a house because the island is not the right shape.
So we've had a triangular shaped island. I hated it. There was no space to work with. It was cramped. If people were there for a party, there was nowhere to get around. No.
They're looking for at least four bedrooms, giving them a guest room.
The House Hunters franchise, it started in 1999, now nearly 800 episodes in the can and spin-offs of the show galore. The impact of HGTV on our lives is what we're talking about this hour with author Caitlin Flanagan. Her piece in New York Magazine is titled Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. Wow, Caitlin, we just heard this clip, the island. You know, what do you make of some of these demands?
Well, you know, what's so funny, as I was saying about that show, is that woman already bought her house before she recorded that. Because if you're going to suggest that you be on HGTV House Hunters, you have to have just bought a house. Mm. And so she knows that ultimately she's, in the course of the episode, she'll be quote unquote shown a house that has those exact features that she says she wants. And she'll choose that house. And at the end, we'll see her sitting happily in that house with her rectangular shaped island. Or, you know, maybe she'll have had to give up one or two things. But it's a little bit of a conceit to think that these people are looking for these super specific things and that they're going to find them in the location they want and at the price that they want. And I think home buyers should probably remember, especially first-time homeowners, the whole name of the game when you're buying your first home is you're going to have to make a lot of concessions. A lot of the things that you think you're going to get, you're probably not going to get in your first home, and maybe over years you'll be able to add to them, or as you progress in your career and your family grows, maybe you'll be able to trade up to a larger house. But that idea that you're going to have this dream wish list and you're going to check off every single box and it'll be exactly the amount of money you've planned, that's a pretty rare scenario.
Well, Charles in Rock County wants to add along this line here. Charles, go ahead.
Hi. I got a couple of comments. On the one hand, I think that everybody should be, I think, responsible for realizing that this is just TV. This is like a video coffee table book of showing the ideal homes, and we can all aspire to that. But the other thing is, I don't think this has been brought up. I think the real estate industry, the real estate agency industry, the realtors, have an obligation to help educate, especially first-time buyers, that what they're seeing on HTV is not reality, and they need to rein in their aspirations. And I don't get the sense, at least from the people who have called in, that they've experienced that with realtors, of bringing them back to reality. And I'll just take my comments off the phone. Thank you.
Caitlin.
Well, you know, as far as buying a house, whether or not you have a realtor who will tell you the truth about it, the market kind of instructs you very quickly. You know, you start out with what you want in your budget, and you start looking at houses that fit. You can usually find a house that fits your budget, and you can usually find another one that has all the features you want. You probably don't find one that has both of those two things. But I think he's absolutely right about realtors. That's, you know, one thing I just would say, it's not in the essay, but from personal experience, you want to do a lot of talking to people before you choose your realtor, because you're going to be spending a lot of time with that person and making a really significant financial decision, probably the biggest one in your life,
yeah,
with your house. So find somebody that has a really good reputation that your friends have worked with before, so you know you're going to be crossing that finish line with somebody with a good reputation.
Let's take another call now. Mark in Richland Center. Hi, Mark.
I'm wondering if there's any kind of connection to the fact that probably these shows are financed by themselves. The shows are financed by bankers because the entire housing market is people having a relationship with a bank. You're not just going to go and buy the neighbor's house and pay the neighbor directly. But the question is then, what is the idea of buying a home through a bank look like? Because if you buy a house for $200,000, over the course of time, you're going to pay $600,000. Based on the fact that it's borrowed money and it's at interest. And the entire process of believing that the market will always go faster than your interest payments is completely ludicrous. And we've seen that with all the people that went underwater. The underwater part meant that they could not make the mortgage payments, and the bank doesn't give a damn if you can make your payments because they'll simply repossess the house.
Caitlin.
Yeah, well, with sponsorship, there's certainly a big crossover between like Home Depot and Lowe's. They do a lot of advertising, and paint companies that make paints. So it's really become a source of sort of synergy between the shows and what the shows describe and get people excited for, and obviously the advertisers who choose to advertise there. And there are some. I believe one mortgage company I have seen advertised there that the Property Brothers have an ad for. So yeah, that's just the truth about television. Advertisers are obviously going to go to advertise their products on shows and networks where people are going to be interested in their products. And yeah, there's a real sort of one hand is washing the other there.
But what about this notion of escapism? You know, can't people who use home improvement programs to relax, to recover from a hard day, dream about these lavish properties and lifestyles? What's the harm?
Oh, I don't think there's any harm. I mean, I certainly enjoy the shows. And it's that aspirational world. You know, we think during the Great Depression, when the most popular movies were showing really opulent nightclubs and fabulous dresses and outfits and wealthy people going out on the town, it wasn't about sort of living a lean life or the difficult life that people actually were living in during the American Depression. So really, there's nothing wrong with it.
Let's take another call now. Liz in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Actually, I disagree with your guest in terms of the harm, because I used to watch HGTV a lot, especially when I was home alone with my daughter. And they used to have do-it-yourself projects, redecorate a room, paint a room, upcycling things that were reasonably simple to learn how to do or to dream about. Now the programs have so many huge projects, really expensive properties, and I found myself getting depressed over things that were just not attainable in my life and my reality. And I wonder if a lot of people get depressed. I mean, who's setting these standards that say, well, you need this and you need that and you need this? And then is that part of our discontent with our own life?
You, Caitlin?
Yeah. She's really right that the programming has changed over the years at HGTV. One of the popular shows in the early years was called Decorating Sense, and it was projects that you could do for your house. The absolute maximum amount of dollars that you would spend was $500. So they were true DIY projects, things that you could buy, a little bit of paint that you could add, something that you could do to make a child's room look more cheerful. And it was nothing that you had to ever hire someone out, even a small job. And so in the beginning, it was projects that were fun to do and that made a bit of an impact and that were within the reasonable scope of somebody who didn't have really any expertise in these fields. But now it is one long advertisement for a big upscale kind of life. And it's, we all know, we've all been there. It's that fine knife edge. Are you going to just sit back and enjoy it as escapist fantasy, or are you going to find that it seeps in a little bit and starts to be a little bit sort of grit under the skin of, wait a minute, why don't I have those things? Everybody seems to have those things. And sometimes we can get in that way of feeling that it's not so much people we actually know who have things we want. It's people on the TV who have it, and that they're more real to our lives and how we should live our lives than the people we know and the values that we hold. And that's why television and all mass media is such a very, very powerful force in lives, in private lives, and what we think we should have.
Liz, thanks for the call. And Helen on Facebook writes, there may be a negative effect on affordable housing availability on affordable housing stock. Helen says, I work with this problem, and many realtors and developers are resistant to building more affordable units where they are needed because they speak of the, quote, HGTV effect, with buyers unrealistically wanting all those things mentioned, granite countertops, huge master baths, etc. So is it impacting housing stock?
Well, it sounds like to this person who has some experience, it is. However, I would say that, you know, the invisible hand of capitalism asserts itself pretty quickly in situations like this. And, you know, if there are enough buyers who can afford these special features, then you know, homeowners will be, or property owners will be, impelled to add them if they can. But usually there are a wide spectrum of buyers who are at the other end of the market. And if you're priced right for the market, that shouldn't affect it. Not everybody is going to be able to afford the upsell features of those things. So I'm sort of interested in how that plays out in any given real estate market.
And so we are talking with Caitlin Flanagan. She's a contributing editor to The Atlantic, and her recent piece in New York Magazine is Beware the Open Plan Kitchen. Let's go to Brian now in Twin Lakes. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, how you guys all doing? I just was listening to your show, and as a producer of reality and a lot of the program you guys are talking about, I just thought I'd contribute a little bit when people ask, it's TV, why are we watching this, and it's not real. And people need to know that we're storytellers, and what we're doing is telling people stories, and what you're seeing is just exactly that, people's stories that they're sharing.
And Brian, what is it like for you in a producing role to work on shows like this?
You know, the interesting part is a lot of times one of the hardest parts of our job is making sure that we're storytelling, that we're not, you have people who want to be on TV, and what you end up with is them on TV suddenly trying to be actors and trying to create their own story. And one of the hardest parts, as I always say when I'm producing people, is I'm here to make you not an actor, I'm here to tell your story. So that's really a challenge when you're in the field dealing with real people who, everybody who's bought a house has a story. Everyone listening has a story for their house. And we just want to tell their story. And that's what the whole program is about.
Caitlin, as we wrap up here, this is about storytelling, as Brian says.
Yeah, that was such an interesting call. It's the story, but it's certainly an enhanced version of the story. You know, if the story included, well, we fought a lot during the closing, and I didn't want to spend as much as my husband did, and we really got into some marital difficulties, that doesn't seem to make it into the story. But again, that's why we watch. We're very impelled to see some happy stories, especially at a time like now when there's so many bad news stories that are percolating around. So, you know, hats off to this network of kind of uplifting, if somewhat unrealistic, stories that's so pleasurable to watch.
Well, Caitlin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was author Caitlin Flanagan. She's a contributing editor to The Atlantic. She's also a reviewer and social critic and author of two books. Her recent piece in New York Magazine is titled Beware the Open Plan Kitchen, and she writes about real-life effects of following those soothing storylines on HGTV. This hour of The Morning Show was produced by Keely Baltina, and Michelle Johnson is executive producer and provided technical direction. We also had on-screen calling help from Nyjah Ellison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and there is no flip or flop on this. You're listening to the Ideas Network.